Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today on Galesburg Live.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we want to get right to this. People are there's a high number of children being taken to the emergency room when there are better options. Could you tell us what you mean by that?
Yes. So one of the things, especially in our clinic, that we like to discuss is when you should take your child to the ER.
Mm-hmm.
And that's things where if it's a newborn, within the first month of life, any fever over 100.4, that's an emergency. Children older than a month or 2 months that get above 101, that's concerning. Really anything, if a child is 2 months and under and has a fever of 100.4, that's an emergency. Take them to the ER.
Mm.
For children of the other ages, 101 is concerning. Not saying that if they have 101 fever, they need to go to the ER. Things where if they have a fever, but they also maybe have respiratory distress, they're not drinking fluids,
mm-hmm.
their urine output is down. Those are things that concern us, and we would want them to go to the ER.
Right. So why do you think that people are bringing their child to the ER rather than the other options, which we'll talk about here in a second?
Sure. I think sometimes it's the weekends and they're not quite sure where to take their kid.
Yeah.
Parents get worried. So the ER, even if they have to wait, is better than nothing in their eyes, which is understandable. I think sometimes it's hard to know, there's an urgent care that's open till 8. You know, I could take them there. OSF does a pretty good job of having other resources when our office is closed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some parents just don't know what those other options
are.
Right,
so let's talk about those options. If your child doesn't fall into that criteria that you mentioned as far as an emergency, what are the other options for parents?
So one of the options that's kind of up and coming and newer to OSF is OSF's on-call virtual care.
Mm.
And that is a virtual option that can be used 24/7 for minor illnesses and injuries and other things that can be diagnosed on the phone or via video chat, like pink eye, rashes, maybe a cough that can be heard on the phone or via video.
And really all it is you go to the website and you could chat with someone back and forth.
I think there's chat,
video,
and phone call options.
And phone call, yeah. So that's
so a nice resource.
Well, my daughter has done that with my granddaughter, who's a year and a half, and my daughter has. They chat back and forth with the provider, and they recommend what to do. They've even prescribed an antibiotic or something through that chat.
It's very
great
helpful,
option.
Especially when we're not open because our office, you know, is only open till 5,
right.
And lots of times our last patient is before 4:30.
Right.
So
the
other thing, of course, is OSF's urgent care and prompt care. And that will be things that maybe not be as accessible over video, phone call, chat. You want to be in person so they can get a really good examination.
Yeah.
Our office likes ears to always be looked at, sore throats in kids to be looked at, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're good for fevers, headaches, and prompt care and urgent care are very good at escalating care if needed. So you could start with prompt care and urgent care, and they could say, hey, we're concerned. We'd like you to take them to the ER.
Yes. Yeah. Now, the on-call is the newest addition here to this area, right?
Yes.
The actual physical building over by Walmart.
Okay.
So that's the on-call there. And then the prompt care was recently moved from out here on the St. Mary's campus to the corner of Losey and Seminary Street, which used to be the Cottage Hospital ER.
Yes.
So those are great options for parents. And so what if I'm just not sure still? What should I do?
You know, worst case scenario, let's think about, I always tell parents to trust their instinct. If they're worried about their child's breathing, if they are concerned for a broken bone, if there's a loss of consciousness or the level of activity in their child is down, they're acting completely different. The dehydration is a big concern for me, and fevers in newborns or high fevers in other kids. Those are all things that I would want them to go straight to the ER. You know, it's one thing where you could get to the ER and you might not need to be there. But in cases like that, it's better to be somewhere where you can get that care. And like I said, you can always start at prompt care and urgent care. And if it needs to be escalated, they can direct you that way too.
Are you from around this area?
I'm from Peoria. I live in Peoria.
Okay, yeah. Great. Have you always wanted to get into, have you always wanted to be in healthcare?
Yes. And always wanted to be pediatrics,
okay.
I think.
You've always wanted to work with children.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. You know, it started first in college where I was first doing some volunteering, and I got a taste of what it's like to work with kids versus adults, and I kind of narrowed it down to children, and kids are so resilient, you know. I could go on for days probably about why I like working with kids, but yeah, I've always known that I like helping people. And before I graduated, I had NICU and PEDS hospital experience, so it's kind of always been kids for me.
The NICU.
You
have experience there too. That's got to be, I mean, it takes a special person to do something like that. I don't know if I could have the,
I just think
it'd be heartbreaking and just sweet and all the time.
It is.
Smiling and just, oh my gosh.
Everything all at once. And, you know, it comes down to you, you know, doing what you do because you love it and you're helping so many people. And those babies don't really know what they're doing, but they're just the best fighters that, they, you know, they don't even know how hard they're fighting, and yet they're still there. They're just such great examples for us, and I will always love NICU,
That chokes me up right there. My daughter is expecting in the first part of May, so just a few weeks we'll have a new little tiny one here, so I'm just looking forward to it. So we're baby-sensitive right now.
Absolutely.
What is your favorite part about working with kids?
Oh, I know I touched on their resilience, but I think probably their minds. You know, I can play pretend when I'm in there with them. We can laugh. Even if they're mad at me and crying, then usually I can get a chuckle or two out of them before they leave. Mm-hmm. And they just, you know, kids don't hold grudges, which is nice. so they won't be mad at me the next time they come in if I have to order a swab or something. But I don't know. It's the resilience for me. They're very good at, you know, doing what they can to be better, and they just want to play, you know.
I my granddaughter had to go to the ER just a few weeks ago. You and I were talking about this off mic, but the one thing that I found amazing about the nurse practitioner that was working with her was that here she's screaming her head off, and she's listening to her back and listening to her. And she could hear everything. She said, don't worry. I've been doing this for 20 years. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I can hear what I need to hear. How do you do that
when
a kid is screaming bloody murder?
It takes practice.
You're trying to get things done. Yeah.
You just got to wait for that pause when they're, you know, trying to take a breath in between the screaming, and you can get it. It's a very sensitive, practiced ear. But after, if they're, most of our kids are upset or sick and not feeling well when we're listening to them. So it just takes practice, and you get that ear skill to kind of hear what you need to hear.
And they can't tell you what hurts.
Right.
They can't tell you where they're sick or where they're, you know.
Right.
My gosh. So you're trying to figure it out for them.
Right. And one thing is kids don't know how to fake it, you know.
Oh, so
that's kind of nice in our field, where if a kid doesn't feel good, they don't feel good. And we try to get down to the nitty-gritty and figure out what's going on.
That's right. So you're an advanced practice registered nurse in pediatrics. What is an APN, right?
Yep.
Okay, what is that? Maybe you can clear that up for people.
Well, I think sometimes it's confusing because there's a million different abbreviations that nurse practitioners can go by. You know, they could say MSN, APRN, PNP, which technically I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner. But essentially, we're registered nurses that have gone on and gotten our master's degree in specific areas. So mine is pediatrics. Yeah. And we get trained and are certified by the state to examine, assess, diagnose, and treat patients. So we can prescribe medicine, we can order tests. And then, you know, for controlled substances and things like that, we have a collaborating physician that we work with. Mm-hmm. And also for resources, you know, there's always other physicians and providers in the office that we bounce ideas off of. Mm. But that's kind of a little bit, I think the most confusing part for people is all of the letters that are often after our name. They don't know what we do or if we can do, you know, certain things. So.
Sure. Well, I'm sure you get asked, you know, we were talking about this off mic too, where somebody comes in, you know, I want to talk to the doctor.
Yep.
I want to talk to the doctor.
That's one I hear a lot.
And you probably do hear that. How do you answer that? Because you do everything you told us is pretty much what the physician is doing.
A lot of that is, like I said, people just don't know what I do. And so I try to not be offended when they think that the doctor is still coming in. But I just kind of educate them and, you know, let them know, okay, if you want the second opinion, absolutely. But I work closely with the docs, and I'm happy to explain my thoughts behind this and kind of work with them. I find that if I explain my reasoning and why I want to do things or kind of let them know my thought process, usually I don't have too many hesitations, and that builds that trust for them. But a lot of them, if it's their first time meeting me and they have a sick kid, they usually just want their kid to feel better. So I just try to reassure them.
We were talking more about you as a pediatric provider. When should a parent start looking for a pediatric provider?
Absolutely. So we like parents to have a pediatric provider picked out before the baby arrives.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there are certain circumstances where that might not happen if a baby is premature, but typically we say when they enter that first trimester, parents can start looking. If they're interested in the office or, you know, they want to meet our pediatricians or providers like myself, usually we can fit them into our schedule so they can meet us, get to know us, and that way they're not bringing their child into a stranger the first time after they're discharged home.
Absolutely. Again, I keep bringing up my granddaughter, but that's my only, that's my most recent reference. We've had three kids, but I just don't remember the doctor's appointments, and my wife pretty much handled a lot of that, but it seems like my granddaughter sees the doctor a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's probably not a lot, but how often should you see your pediatric provider?
Well, she's 1.5, right?
She is, yes.
So she does see the doctor a lot.
Yeah.
So the first year, there's a lot of visits. Typically, we'll see the newborn infant a day or two after discharge.
Yeah.
At 1 week of age, 2 weeks of age, 1 month of age, 2 months of age, and then 4, 6,
yeah.
Nine.
Well, I was right. It is a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. The first year, it is a lot. And that first 2-4 months are all about weight checks and making sure that the child is growing well.
Yeah.
After the child is 2, then we move to every year.
Okay.
So one well visit per year. And that kind of goes all the way up to age 18.
Yeah.
At age 18, of course, they start looking for a family provider.
Sure.
But, and then after they have their well visit, of course, we're there all the other time for sick visits, you know, if there's anything else going on in the child's life where they need to come to the doctor, you know. But really, after they're age 2, it's just one well child visit a year that we want them to be there.
I would think one of the hardest parts of what you do are those doggone shots, the immunization shots.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just heartbreaking. I remember, you know, the doctor had me hold my child down.
Oh, gosh.
And they're looking at me with these eyes saying, why?
Save me, Grandpa.
Why did you do this? Why? What did I ever do to you?
Yeah.
But you're so quick and so gentle. That's a learned thing, too.
Yeah.
I would think that would be one of the scariest things.
Well, you know, when I was a bedside nurse, I was the one giving the shots. But now that I'm a provider, I try not to give shots because I don't want the child to associate me with the shots.
Interesting. So okay.
I typically will not be the one giving the shots, but the nurses in the office will give the shots. And that way the child isn't scared to see me every time they come
right,
in.
Right,
so, but, you know, it is hard because you don't want your child held down and to get the shots. I just try to let them know, you know, I know this is hard right now, but it's best to have these, you know, immune responses for them to be able to fight things off when they need it. And I think that helps a lot. And we try to bribe kids with popsicles. So
we're here at OSF, kind of taking it out on the road this week for Galesburg Live. Stephanie Stokes is a pediatrics advanced practice registered nurse here at OSF Galesburg Clinic here on North Seminary Street at the OSF St. Mary Medical Center campus. And do you have any tricks of the trade to get a child to do what you need them to do
to win their trust,
to win their, you know, because not every kid, like I said, my granddaughter is at the point where every person that walked in that door, she was like, no, and almost when you're starting to leave, she's going, bye-bye, meaning get out of here.
Yes. I have a few tricks that I like to pull out, but I really try to let the child know what I'm going to do before I do it.
Yeah.
And I try to do least invasive first, meaning I'll listen while they're calm to their heart and lungs, and then maybe listen to their belly and kind of feel their belly. And typically the thing that I have the hardest time is usually looking into their ears.
They don't like that, do they?
They don't like that, especially if they've had a lot of ear infections.
Oh, yeah.
So I just try to kind of use mom or dad's chest to hold them there, do a quick look, and then they're like, oh, that's done. And if I see them a lot, typically, you know, they don't get too upset anymore. But I think just kind of playing with them and smiling at them, talking to them, and not just going straight into the exam helps a little bit, too.
Anything that parents can do to prepare for that visit?
Absolutely.
Anything, I mean, you know, short of, you know, giving them a tiny dose of Benadryl or something. I mean, that sounds terrible, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Is there something we can calm them down a little bit, you know?
I think, you know, playing at home with medical tools is always helpful.
Yeah.
There's play stethoscopes. There's even fake shots.
Little shots. Oh, yeah, we've got all that.
Fake otoscopes where they can practice looking into their ear.
I'll be darned.
I think that really helps. And then one of my other tricks is if the kid wants to listen or pretend to look in my ears, I will let them do that too.
Oh,
and
that's
nice. Seems to help them be a little bit more comfortable.
Absolutely.
So I think if you can play, you know, quote unquote, doctor's office or provider's office, as they've been saying, because there's a lot of nurse practitioners now. But if you can play pretend at home before they come in, makes it more of a fun game for them, and they get a little more excited.
Stephanie Stokes is a pediatrics advanced practice registered nurse at OSF Galesburg Clinic. And that's some valuable information there. That's really good.
Thank you.
That is very good. So, but at some point, though, Stephanie, if a child is just not able to calm down, you've got to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm amazed at watching the providers do their job and get things done with a child who is just inconsolable.
Yeah. You know, we never try and do things that make a child upset or keep them upset. But in the end, if this child is really sick and we need to look in those ears, we try to do it in the best way possible.
I loved your explanation that children are very forgiving.
Yes.
It happens. They don't hold grudges, I think is what you had said. We talked about this earlier, Stephanie, and one of the big reasons why we wanted to talk with you today was not only just to get people to know you a little bit better, but the big question on every parent's mind is when their child is sick, where do they go? And there is a large number of people here in the area that have been bringing their children to the ER when there are most times there's other options here, and we talked about that. When should they go to the emergency room?
Sure.
And when is urgent care or prompt care the most appropriate?
So these symptoms, or if your child is acting in this way, is when I would want you to take them to the emergency room. Any change in consciousness where the child is not acting like themselves, they're super lethargic and you can't wake them up. If you think the child is dehydrated, they're not taking in any fluids, and they've had less than 3 diapers in 24 hours, that's a big concern for me. Any newborn or infant really under the age of 2 months that has a fever of 100.4 or higher, that's an emergency. Kids that are older than that but have a fever of 101 and also have maybe some respiratory distress, meaning they're having trouble breathing, they're coughing so bad that they're turning blue, things like that, accompanied with a fever, there are big signs of infection, I would want you to take them in. any loss of consciousness, broken bones, or, of course, bones that you can see. I'm trying to think of anything else.
Choking.
Choking.
I mentioned to you the reason my granddaughter had to go to the ER. She choked on a tiny piece of strawberry.
Yeah.
And she coughed it up. We saw it. But they were still just a little concerned. And that's why she went in for the chest x-ray. Everything was clear, but we appreciated their extra caution.
Yes.
And they had said that she needed to drink something. If she can drink something, then she should be okay. But even when she did, they still thought, you probably ought to get that chest x-ray. We're glad we did it, but.
Right, yeah. Choking's another big one. I always tell parents to follow their instincts. They know their child best. If they're super concerned, should take them to the ER.
That's right.
That being said, if your kid has a sore throat, a low-grade fever, or is just feeling a little warm, that you can first try and get them into our office because we have same sick day appointments that we hold open. Or you can go to urgent care, prompt care, or consult the on-call virtual care, which is 24/7.
What's the best way to take your child's temperature?
Sure.
And I'm sure it's different for every age, for different ages.
Yep. So it is kind of hard because there's lots of new thermometers on the market too. For infants, I would say rectal or in their bottom is the best way to take their temperature. That's going to be the most accurate, and you can just, I know a lot of parents are worried about that, but just be gentle when you're doing it. But then when they get older, you can do the armpit if they won't keep it in their mouth. And then for the older kids that will keep it under their tongue, that is a very good, that's our preference.
Yeah.
The forehead thermometers or the ear thermometers, depending on the kind that you have, can work well. But if you're taking a temperature and the thermometer says your kid's 103 degrees, but you feel them and they feel normal to you, you know, just use your judgment because sometimes those skin thermometers that are ear or forehead, they're not the best at correlating. And we have some good ones in clinic where we can use it in the ear and on the forehead, and those ones I trust. But I just know some of the less expensive ones that I see, for instance, at Walmart, aren't as good. You know, the mom may be like, oh, my child has a temperature, but then that thermometer reads low.
Yeah.
I would want the mom to trust her instinct and say that the child has a fever.
Gotcha. Stephanie Stokes is a pediatrics advanced practice registered nurse at OSF Galesburg Clinic at the OSF Healthcare St. Mary Medical Center campus. And in our last few minutes, I wanted to talk a little bit about vaccinations.
The first vaccines start at 2 months old, and they'll get just one shot at their two-month appointment. And then at their four and 6 month, they'll also get the vaccines. And the thing that is hard is, you know, in that brief moment, it really stinks being that parent where your child is looking at you, wants you to pick them up, save them from these mean ladies that are giving them shots. But we just have to remember that, you know, vaccines are important to protect them. And it's something that will benefit them, even though right now it's, you know, it really sucks and that sort of thing.
Obviously, there was a big movement against vaccinations.
We just try our best to educate and, you know, let them know if your child is healthy and can get vaccines, it's important to keep them healthy and to also protect the kids that maybe can't get a vaccine, whether that's an immune condition, certain medical you know, issues that they can't get them. So, you know, we try to protect them by vaccinating those that can. And so it's all about having an open conversation with your pediatrician, your advanced practice nurse. You know, if we all go into the conversation calm and just willing to listen, I think that helps a lot too.
Does it get kind of dicey?
When
you're talking with people who are just dead set against it and you're trying to help educate them and they're just.
Yeah, it can definitely. But I'm not very confrontational myself.
Sure.
So I will typically, you know, ask if they want to discuss it and say, you know, I would love to have you back to talk about the reasons why I think it's important for your child. I will often say, my goal is for your child to be the best that they can be. And I know that's your goal too. And I think it's important for their health. And once they know that I'm on the same page as them and I'm not trying to, you know, to persuade them to do it just because I think so, I usually have a good outcome.
Great. Stephanie Stokes is a pediatrics advanced practice registered nurse at OSF Galesburg Clinic at OSF Healthcare St. Mary Medical Center campus here. And one last thing before we let you go, we want to talk about, well, it's the internet. And
yes,
it can be a wonderful resource for a parent to help calm their nerve. It can also be a source of tremendous stress.
Yes. Yeah, it can cause a lot of panic when the panic might not be necessary. I'm a Googler myself, even though most of the time I already know the things that I'm Googling. But, you know, there are a lot of people that the world is at our fingertips these days, and a small thing can go to a really big thing very quickly and cause a lot of panic and stress in parents' lives that don't need to be there. And we see that a lot in office. And once parents see something, it's hard to unsee it,
right,
and kind of step back. So one of our things we tell parents a lot is when their child is sick or they're worried about something, try not to Google first. Come see us and let's work through it together. And then if we get a diagnosis, Google away, you know. But we don't want you thinking your child is very ill and going to need all these specialists if it's something a little simpler, because you don't need to be taking years off your life worrying about something that might not be the case there.
I feel for these young parents.
I do too.
Nowadays. But I feel like you're seeing the worst of the worst.
And I think that's because of the algorithms on the internet. You know, you put in these symptoms, of course it's going to pull up the very worst of the worst.
Right.
Because that's what it's trained to do. But I would say if you can hold off if you're really worried about something, try not to Google it before you talk with us. And then, you know, if we figure it out and give you a diagnosis, we'll probably give you some good resources for you to look up yourself, but we just don't want you worrying and, causing unnecessary worry if you don't need to be.
Well, Stephanie, again, wise words. Love that. Thank you. And what a great way to wrap this up. And we appreciate your time today. Thank you to you and all your mission partners, your team, for everything you do for our little ones. We really appreciate you.
Thanks for trusting us with your kids. And thanks for having me today.